Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, November 19th. I'm Ray Graff. Time to talk some car maintenance and repair with our buddy Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your calls, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. It's always a popular show when Gordon is here. So if you got a clunking in your rear end, or maybe your muffler is making a loud noise, just give us a call, 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Yep, it's the one and only Gordon Fricke here to answer your car questions coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program once again to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive industry for more than 30 years. He began in Germany. And if you have a question for Gordon, he's pretty good about this stuff. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or feel free to email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. Or 800-348-2551. Mr. Gordon Fricke joining us from a remote location today. How are you?
I'm good, Ray. How are you?
I'm feeling pretty good now that you're on the show. There was some question that you wouldn't be able to make it, and then I was thinking about what I would say for an hour, and I don't know that much about cars, so I'm glad you're here. You texted me a little bit ago and said, you know, Volkswagen's having some trouble over in Germany. What's going on?
Yeah, I'd like to give you a little bit of a nip of information before we get started once in a while.
Yeah.
And I've got kind of a family connection to Volkswagen. My entire family worked in Volkswagen, Audi, or one of their divisions at some point or another. And my cousin's currently in Wolfsburg right now. Sales are down. The EV switch has been very, very slow and awkward and cumbersome for all car manufacturers. And Volkswagen had a lot of trouble with their software and their tech. They just couldn't figure it out. They had to bring in outside help. And I think they've got somebody that they've kind of hunted from Apple. But make a long story short, profits are down. It's a giant corporation. They have shareholders to satisfy. And there has been very serious talk about closing three facilities in Germany, which is a punch in the gut to
Germany. Never happened, has it?
I don't know. I mean, they've laid off. They've scaled down. They've scaled up. They've built plants. They've shuttered certain divisions. But it doesn't sound, you know, it's the company is so massive and they're into so many things. They're not going away.
Right.
But they're doing some serious soul searching and some restructuring.
I'm wondering, is this a question of a surprising lack of demand in Europe for electric vehicles? Really?
Yes. Yes. And I'm not sure what countries. I know the demand for Germany is very sluggish and slow.
Yeah.
Very much like the United States. We are not adopting, where the early adopters did their adopting, and now the new purchasers are not strong. There's not a big field of new EV enthusiasm out there.
You know, it's funny. We had an email about 45 minutes, maybe an hour ago, from Chris, who wants to talk about VW electric vehicles. And Chris writes, I don't enjoy opening a can of worms, but why are there extreme opinions concerning the use of electric cars? My wife and I have a Volkswagen example, which is superb in every way. Rural, cold, hilly life here are ignored by this machine, as the bugs I've owned were, but we happily accelerate past gas stations. And that's from Chris.
So in certain applications, it's seamless and it's not a problem. In other cases where there are long distances between charging stations, you know, the old range anxiety was a big thing and still is. And with a legacy car manufacturer like Volkswagen, Chevrolet, Subaru, or Toyota, you've got a dealer network out there.
Yeah.
But when you're talking of some of the smaller upstarts, even Tesla, they don't have service centers all over the place. Rivian, very few. So people are saying, okay, this is great, but I'm going to spend $70,000 on this EV, and I want to drive wherever I want to. We go to Canada. We go skiing. We're going to go south. But what if this car breaks down and my nearest service center is 500 miles away?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
There's a lot of factors.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody in the front office earlier today who has a hybrid. And he said, you know, it scares me a little bit when I see on the dash firmware update needed. And he said, I never want to do that until I get home. is that just a function of electric or hybrid vehicles, or are the, you know, I drive over older vehicles, but I've never seen that pop up.
Over-the-air updates are now common on modern vehicles.
Yeah.
And when I say modern, I'm talking fairly late model. And the vehicle has to be connected.
Yeah.
It has to be on the internet via satellite. And that opens up a whole nother realm of questions of privacy, data collection. Does the, quote, internet need to know everything you're doing in your car? In other words, where are you? How fast you're going? How quickly did you go through that last curve? You're on the brakes a little hard, aren't you? I mean, all that stuff is, you know, it's true. I test drove a customer's car, I don't know, a year or so ago, and they said, I need you to check my brakes out. I have a braking concern. It doesn't seem to stop properly or whatever it was. So
right.
I took the car out and I gave it some spirited braking. The next day, the customer said, I kind of forgot about this, but I have a device plugged into my car from my insurance company.
Yes.
And they alerted me that I did some I forget what the term was, but it was unconventional, unacceptable braking maneuvers.
Wow. You know, I've seen those ads, and that was always my original fear. I don't want them telling me what to do or how, you know, you took that turn a little too fast and this and that. That's why I'll never do that. I don't care if there's a discount or not.
Ray, I don't know how much discount it is. I think it's more to get data on people's driving habits and or say, you know, I'm sorry, Mr. Graff, but we thought maybe you'd qualify for a discount, but your driving now qualifies you for an increase.
Yeah, or the cancellation in my case.
Or a cancellation, yeah.
All right, the number to call here is 800-3. Enough complaining from me. 800-348-2551 is our number. You got a car question? Gordon Fricke is with us on the phone. Let's begin in Hudson. Austin, you're on. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for having me. So I've got a 2011 or 2010 Dodge Charger. And I'm basically calling because I feel like I'm stuck between two really vast opinions. I've had one place tell me that this thunking sound when I gently apply the brakes, not it doesn't happen if I really apply the brakes, that this thunking sound that I can actually feel in the bottom of my foot is because of a lower forward control arm having some movement. It's not supposed to have any, and they said it moves about an inch and a quarter. I don't honestly know what that even means to say, but that's what I was told. And then I've had another place say, we can't find any evidence of that whatsoever. You seem to have no problems. It's probably brake dust. See if it's going away in 2 or 3 weeks. And they were wrong because it's still here two or three weeks later. So I'm just wondering if we have any idea roughly which way I should be leaning. Is there a more common than not cause of this that I could maybe bring to a third place, that kind of thing.
Austin, of all, thank you for saying thunking. When you first said it, I said, uh-oh, we got real trouble. And I had a mild...
ready to hit the dump button, right?
But I had a mild heart attack. So anyway, go ahead, Gordon.
Best
behavior on the show. We're good.
Ray warned me on our first show to not use a word that begins with the letter F. And I said, are you kidding me, Ray? Would you think I'm going to do that here on the radio?
Well, you never know.
Yeah. But anyway, so I'm going to go with shop A in your case, because we run into quite a bit of that thumping that you're experiencing when you first step on the brake. And what happens is this is happening in the front. So the front wheels are now getting brakes applied. So the wheel is slowing down, but the car isn't. So the wheel tries to basically move towards the back of the car. And if that control arm bushing has any wear in it that's not acceptable and it becomes great, it'll give you that popping sound or that thump. And a good way to check this, I do this all the time. Did they say it was the driver's or the passenger side?
They actually didn't, but I'm only really able to tell on the driver's side.
Well, so this is what I do when they're really bad. You can be in a parking lot, obviously somewhere you want to be off the street, but I will put the window down and hang out the window far enough so I can physically see the tire.
Got it.
And then step on that, you know, just kind of hit that brake pedal, on and off, and watch the wheel. And if those bushings are really bad, you'll see that tire leap rearwards, you know, by an inch or so, and you'll hear feel that thump at the very same time. And they're sometimes very hard to determine where when the car is raised up on a lift, because everything changes. All the geometry is different now.
Right.
But I'm going to say that your first shop is probably pretty accurate.
All right, Austin, we're going to have to leave it there. We have to take a break. Gordon Fricke is our guest today, and we are just underway. Automotive Maintenance and Repair, 800-348-2551 or VoxPop at WAMC.org. Love for sale. It's rent to own. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke's our guest today. Automotive maintenance and repair is the topic. Couple emails here, Gordon, and then we'll go back to the phones. This one's from Keegan. I have a 2010 4Runner check engine light. The code reads PO430. Do I need to replace both catalytic converters, or may it be an oxygen sensor?
Well, he's got a good question there, because PO420 and PO430 are ugly codes.
Oh.
Particularly when it's ready for a state inspection.
Yeah.
PO420 is the catalytic converter on the bank one of the engine. And years ago, I always go back to your 65 Le Mans.
Oh, yeah.
The engine was longitudinal. Totally mounted. In other words, the crankshaft is in line with the drive shaft and everything running down the center of the car. So bank one was on those cars always on the left side, but now the engines are turned around transversely, and that changes it, and sometimes they move bank one to the back. But anyway, PO420 is bank one, PO430 is bank two, and it means the catalytic converter is running inefficiently according to the computer.
Mm.
Doesn't 100% mean the converter is failing or faulty. It could be an air leak in the exhaust stream near catalytic converter number two.
Mm-hmm.
And it can also be a failing or malfunctioning oxygen sensor, which the emailer emailed you there, or us.
Right.
So it needs to be diagnosed. And with data, we can watch what's happening with those converters to see if they're cleaning up the exhaust stream or not.
Now,
so may not be total bad news, but it needs to be tested.
Now, you know, there are a lot of different fluids, and we've talked about Tecron and some of these fuel injector or fuel system cleaners, and they work very well. But
yeah.
Are there any reputable, and I don't want you to give me brand names here, but cleaners or some kind of fluid you can put in that will help your catalytic get back into shape?
100%, because a great reason for catalytic converter inefficiencies are deposits that have built up inside the converter over, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of miles.
Yeah.
And if those deposits can be cleaned, that will expose the catalyst in the catalytic converter and it'll start working again.
Yeah.
So I would advise anybody to always use additives first, particularly on anything with some mileage on it. And there are a few brands out there, and they do have the phrase "cat" in their name.
Yeah,
because they're cleaning catalytic converters.
How do you put the, you put it right in the gas tank?
Yep, just like your Tecron, just like your gas additive converter cleaners. They recommend you pour it in on about a quarter of a tank,
mm-hmm.
put in a full bottle. Then they ask you to drive maybe 10 or 15 miles so you get a really, really strong concentration of the cleaner.
Yep.
Then you fill the tank and run that tank close to empty to get the full benefit.
Wow.
And it does work in some cases. I've had good luck with it. If they can be cleaned, it'll do it. If they're gone, they're gone. But you got to try it.
All right. This email from Rich, and then we'll go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke's our guest. 2003 Eurovan. Oh, this is right up your alley. The oil light and audio alert goes on now and then. I check the oil level right away. It's okay. Sensor seems to go off when I'm going a slow speed, and it seems to be activated when I hit a slight bump or two. I think it should be replaced. Is that an easy task for a mechanic?
Well, let's see. It's in what year is it again?
2003 Eurovan, VW.
So 2003. They had two engine choices in the Eurovans, and at one point they only put the VR6 in it, but it could have had a five-cylinder early on. But VW has had a lot of trouble in their oil sensing systems, particularly in those years.
Yeah.
And it's possible that the sensing switches, there's two of them involved, are malfunctioning, and those vehicles had a lot of incidents of false oil lights and buzzers coming on.
Interesting.
I worked at a big dealership in the 80s, late 80s, and we were changing those switches like popcorn back then because they were wasn't the greatest sensing system. So I doubt the engine's in trouble. You always want to make sure the oil pressure is adequate before you waste a lot of time and money on other stuff. So an oil pressure test is critical. If it passes the oil pressure test, it's probably those two sensors because they work together.
Interesting. So if this is something that is just annoying to Rich, then it's not a fail on an inspection, right?
No, not at all. But you definitely don't want to get accustomed to driving with an oil light on, because what if it's for real and you blow the engine up?
Well, he checks the oil, though, right?
Yeah, well, checking it is one thing. He's only able to check the level. If the pressure is failing,
oh, I see what you're
now
saying.
You got an engine problem occurring.
Right. Okay, let's go back to
which
our phones. Go ahead, Gordon.
Which he probably does not have, but you always need to rule out that the pressure is okay.
And is the switch an expensive fix? I mean, that's a 21-year-old vehicle. Do they still
switches,
even make the switches?
They do. They're not expensive. The location on the five-cylinder is, if I remember correctly, horrendous.
So that's a lot of labor cost right there, then.
The VR6, I don't think, are as bad. The five-cylinder engine appeared in a lot of cars over those years,
yeah.
And the switches are in an awful location.
All right, let's go back to our phone lines. Gordon Fricke's our guest. We'll go to beautiful Tarrytown. Brian, where are you listening? Are you listening online in Tarrytown? Can't be over the air, right?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on with Gordon Fricke.
Okay, I'm going to make this quick because Gordon has already addressed it with the catalytic converter issue, I believe. I have a 2012 Jeep Grand Cherokee, and for as long as I've had it, the check engine light comes on. It'll be on for weeks, then it goes off. I take it to the garage. I spend $400. It's fine. 6 months later, it comes back on. For 12 years, this has been happening, and I can't pass inspection.
Ouch.
You're right. So I don't know what to do. It's off at the moment. You know, so, but Gordon, I'll try the the cleaner. It's called a catalytic converter cleaner.
Well, what is the code?
It shows what looks like a battery, kind of a little battery thing. And
when you take it to the shop, when they scan it, what is the code? Is it a PO420 or a PO430?
Oh, you're talking Brazilian
Brian, here's the thing. If you go to your local big box auto parts store or your little auto parts store, you're going to find relatively inexpensive a code reader. I have one of these.
Oh.
Highly recommend it. You plug it in. Usually it's under your steering wheel, and then it'll give you this code that Gordon's talking about, a PO420 or a 430, and then you know a little more.
Okay.
Like, I replaced what is that thing I replaced, Gordon?
Mass airflow sensor,
which was also tripping the check engine light. That was like a $20 part, and you could do it yourself.
Yeah. Boy, you would the shop would not do that.
Well, they're plugging it in, but if you've had 12 years of check engine lights, you know, I don't. The question is, there's probably 100 different codes you could have.
Yeah.
So my question was, are you getting the same code all these years, or is it just a variety of codes popping up? You know.
I will check that. That'd
be
good.
Yeah.
Well, listen, call us back. You know, those code readers are really—they'll teach you a lot about a car, even if you don't want to learn
it. Sounds great.
Yeah, man. Thanks for the call.
Great. Love the show.
Appreciate it very much. 800-348-2551 is the number. Chatham. Yep. Jerry, you're on.
Okay. So I was thinking of getting my daughter, who has a 2019 HRV, a remote starter. I had one years ago in a different car, and there were issues. So Honda doesn't have that part for that car now. But I was just wondering what you think of the whole deal of aftermarket remote starters.
So Honda does not offer a software package for that vehicle?
No. 1 year too late and one model trim model down.
Wow, that's surprising. Okay, so, you did the right thing. You checked with them first because integrating it from the dealership level is the best way to do it because you're not chopping into any vehicle wiring or adding any aftermarket, maybe marginally compatible components in there. So if you're forced to go aftermarket, I've seen a fair share of bad auto starters that cause lots of trouble later on down the road. And a lot of it has to do with the skill level of the installer. And I've seen them chop into wires that should never have been chopped into. So that's a hard thing to sort out. My advice would be do not get the cheapest, thing you can find out there. I would take it to a shop that has a ton of experience with installing these in vehicles like yours with some kind of a warranty to back you up. Because I've seen the failure end of these things, and I've had to tear some of them out because the car gets towed in, doesn't start anymore. So just
the
be
only
careful
car
where
I
you
had,
get one.
Once I had the remote starter, the cruise control didn't work.
I've heard that in other cases, yes. Stuff like that fails because it's not a good integrated system and or the installer tapped into the wire next to the wire that he was supposed to tap into,
Honda said they use the same people and they don't have problems with them, but I appreciate your opinion.
Well, thanks.
I would go to where your Honda dealer recommends if they've got a relationship with an installer.
All right, Jerry, thanks a lot. Let's go to Kristen in Latham. Hello, Kristen, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a 2019 Honda Tucson that I bought.
Hyundai Tucson, okay.
Out of state. And I've had engine issues since I purchased it. And I know they're really bad from all the research I've done. At 53,000 miles, I brought it into the dealership on June 6th of 2019. free because of the engine light coming on and the engine knocking. Fast forward, my car is still sitting in my garage, undrivable. The car was accelerating on its own, braking on its own. I've opened a Better Business Bureau claim. They said I was never eligible. I got bad information from New York State Attorney General's office. I've had an open claim with Hyundai North America, who could not get any pre-authorizations validated at two local Hyundai dealerships. So when I was trying to explore other options and doing what mechanics said, it should be covered under warranty by the time I finally figured everything out and doing all the research on this vehicle model with the new engine, I'm over 60,000 miles and nothing supposedly is covered under warranty. So I just thought I'd pick your brain, see what your thoughts were, and see if you had any recommendations. And I could tell you my codes. I know my codes.
Oh, you know your codes. All right, well, hang on to those for a sec. Gordon, go ahead.
Okay.
I couldn't quite make out everything at first. Tell me the year of the car.
Sorry, 2019.
Okay, got it. All right, yep. And it's a Tucson?
Yes, sir.
What is the engine?
New. And you?
Do you know what the engine size is?
In other words,
off the top of my head, no, sorry, don't.
Do they come in different sizes, Gordon? 4 and 6 cylinders?
Well, being a Tucson, I do not believe there was a 6-cylinder option. So Hyundai had a very large incidence of engine problems, I guess, up until that model year. Yeah, I know they did. Have you spoken to the manufacturer directly, not the dealer, but Hyundai itself?
Yes, I've had my claim escalated twice, so I'm like at a third level person. They want me to bring it to the dealership and see if they can, a third dealership, to see if they can assess something different. And they have advised me, this third dealership, that if the engine light is not flashing, it is definitely not, I guess, the rod bearing failure, where they will automatically replace your entire engine for you.
Right.
So I'm just not sure where to go, because I'm in Latham. The dealership I would have to bring it to would be Glens Falls, because Albany and Schenectady are unwilling to communicate back to the Hyundai North America, believe that or not.
All right. Go ahead,
Gordon.
Yeah,
I do believe it. I totally believe it. My opinion on dealerships has changed a lot in the last 10 years. I think what I would do is follow Hyundai of North America's advice and suggestion and go to dealership number 3. And you have to do something. You can't leave the car sitting in your garage undrivable.
Yeah.
And see if you can get it resolved. Who put the engine in the car? Was it a Hyundai dealer?
Oh, it's just
it came with the car.
I bought it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's not a replacement.
But you know that the engine had been replaced.
Oh, no. I bought it used with like 11,000 miles on it from a Hyundai dealership.
Okay.
I thought you had said earlier new engine.
No.
The new NU is the name of the engine.
Okay, understood.
They have different names.
Right. That's
okay.
All right.
Yes. So
sorry about
you're
going
to have So you've got to follow Hyundai's advice and go to dealership number 3 and see where you get. That's all you can do, unfortunately. And keep a relationship or rapport open with Hyundai North America, because they're the ones that are going to authorize dealership number 3 can go ahead and do repairs that they will get reimbursed for.
Aha. That's a good...
So stay right on top of Hyundai North America and dealer number 3.
Can she get in touch with Hyundai North America on her own?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, definitely. Well, she's already got a case going or a claim filed, so...
I thought that was with the local shop. Okay, that's the way to go. Hey, Kristen, I got to let you go because we have a break here, but good luck. Let us know how you did next month, 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke's our guest. It's Cars Today, automotive maintenance and repair. We'll check the email bag and then get back to the phones in a moment. Zach Malloy on the underwriting never sounded better than he just did with James Brown Band behind him there from It's a Mother. That's Top of the Stack. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke's our guest today. It's automotive maintenance and repair. We'll get back to the phones in a moment. This email from Mike. Mike said, my 2012, Audi A6 has xenon headlights. They are now 12 years old and do not seem to be as bright as they used to be. Of course, I'm also 12 years older, and I'm wondering if the problem is that my eyes aren't as good as they used to be. My questions, do xenon headlights lose brightness as they get older? Do they need maintenance or adjustment? And that's from Mike in Rexford.
Yeah, that's a good question because a couple of things occur. The lenses on the outside, depending on where the car is stored, if it's a 24/7 outdoor car or if it's in most of the time, the lenses can get cloudy, the plastic. You've seen these fogged up car headlights before,
yeah,
right?
I have them, yes.
So you know firsthand.
Yep.
So the lens itself plays a role in that, of course. And the xenon bulb or the HID bulb, as it wears, it does kind of burn itself out. And I've replaced them where, let's say, one of them has failed, and it actually starts to melt the glass where the xenon is. You know, it kind of turns it into like a bubble.
Yep.
So I said, geez, I wonder what the other one's like if this one's burned out and the other one's still working. So if they're easy to change, I've taken the other side out and said, wow, this thing is like halfway gone, and it's bubbled up and looking horrible. They're expensive, but they do kind of fizzle out. So the lenses on the outside and the bulbs themselves are definitely in question. As for cataracts, I can't answer that question.
Well, you know, you'd see sort of a glow around the oncoming headlights, but I don't know about your own lights causing some trouble
right.
If you have cataracts. All right, there you go. James writes in, I drive a 20... Oh, boy, I tell you, I can't do numbers or words today. It's even worse than usual. I drive a 2005 Honda Accord with a V6 engine, says James. I just have to ask. In the old days, it used to be easy to tell when a starter was going bad because gradually it would take longer and longer for the engine to turn over. But now, with almost everything under the hood being computerized, how can you tell if your starter is beginning to go bad?
Well, I wouldn't be a bit concerned unless it click, 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 then starts.
Yeah.
Or if it starts and makes what sound to me like grinding, laboring, straining sounds. Starters last a long time on certain cars today. They can last the life of the engine.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's not having any issues that he thinks are starter related, and which can also be battery related, you know, a weakening battery will mimic a weakening starter.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd be overly concerned. My thing would be on that car, condition of the battery, age and condition, and condition of the terminals if they're corroded and need to be serviced and cleaned.
Okay. And when you're cleaning battery terminals, I've had that, you know, the whatever that stuff
the corrosion.
Is. Yeah, the alkaline. Is it alkaline? Just kind of ash almost on the terminals?
It's actually, yes, it is acidic, and the cleaners are basic. They're
okay,
basic,
so it's acidic.
To neutralize them, yeah.
When you
yeah.
spray them, do you have to take the connections off to really do it right, or can you just spray and hope it sinks in?
You can do that if they're really brutal. You can do that first to get them so they're even manageable so you can touch them.
Yeah.
But yes, to thoroughly clean them, they have to come off of the battery because there's going to be a tremendous amount of corrosion that has worked its way around those terminals and around the posts and all. Sometimes it's unbelievable how that corrosion just creeps its way into everything.
Now, when you take off a battery terminal, are you going to take off the ground side or the positive side first?
You always take the ground side off first.
Okay.
Because if your wrench hits the engine or a piece of metal, it won't matter because you're already on the ground end.
Yeah.
So you always want to get the ground off and totally disconnected. Then you're safe to do anything you want on the positive side.
All right, fair enough. One more email and then back to the phones. John in Herkimer writes in, I have a 2018 Dodge Grand Caravan with a check engine light on that's showing a code that says faulty thermostat / coolant. This light goes off in the summer, comes on in the winter. Do I really need to get the thermostat replaced? The car runs fine otherwise. Heat in the car is fine. Temperature gauge always shows right in the middle, and that's from John in Herkimer.
Yeah. What that is the vehicle's computer times how quickly the engine warms up from a cold start. And that is accomplished by the thermostat. Thermostat's in charge of engine temperature.
Hmm.
If it's taking longer for that engine to reach operating temperature, the computer feels that the thermostat's getting lazy. And it generally is the early signs of the thermostat failing. And he may not be noticing anything really, but it's probably not working the way it started out life working.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's got any kind of mileage on, it's an 18 vehicle, so that's old enough. And that's not too bad of a thermostat to change on that vehicle. Mm-hmm. I think before super cold weather comes, I would do it and get it over with so you're not suffering with poor heat and no defroster this January when the thermostat decides to totally give up.
Gordon Fricke's our guest. Back to the phones to Pittsfield. It's Mike. You're up, Mike.
Hi, yes. I think I talked to you about 4 or 5 years ago about my Ford Escape. I have a 2013 Ford Escape. And I was told that I needed a lower or inner tie rod. So I replaced it. Then I was told, then my strut went. Then my ball joint went. Then my wheel bearing went. I replaced all of that. I've redone every bit of it. Now I'm getting a low grind when I turn right. And I'm still getting the bang that I got from the very first initial, when they checked it out the first time. Can you tell me what is going on? It's terrible. I mean, it's so scary. I brought it to two mechanics, and they said, well, the whole front end over there is real tight, and it sounds good, and I don't know what the problem is.
Hmm.
So are you hearing it? Do you think you can tell which side of the front end it is?
Yes, definitely it's the right side, and that's the whole part. That's the side that I replaced everything in. It's definitely on the right. People sitting in the passenger seat have gone, like, jumped and said, what was that bang? Because it was a bad bang. Or when I'm going around a corner slowly, it starts like a grind, not a grind, just like something isn't totally in place yet. And then as I'm driving down the road, it's fine until I hit another pothole. Pittsfield's famous for him, so.
Sorry.
So did you say the strut was replaced also?
The strut was replaced also, along with the wheel bearing and hub.
And
sorry, go ahead.
I'm assuming they probably replaced the entire strut with a unit, not just the shock absorber part of it. Or don't you know that they did? Okay.
No, I it was the whole unit. It was the whole unit.
Yep, because the upper mountings can fail, and you'd bolt on the problem to the new strut if you didn't change the entire assembly. In that case, I would be concerned. Did you say the lower control arm got changed also?
Would that lower control arm? Would that be the part that has the wheel bearing in it?
The lower control arm basically holds the bottom of the wheel into the chassis of the front end. It's shaped like a triangle. Usually, some cars have more than one. And the ball joint either is built into it or attaches to it.
Yes, and I replaced that whole unit.
Lower arm?
Yes.
I guess I couldn't guess away at anymore, because if I didn't see or hear or feel it, they've changed a whole bunch of stuff in there.
Yeah.
It could be something related, but everybody's missing it, like the maybe the mounting that holds the steering rack in place, or sway bar bushings. There's got to be some stuff in there that maybe is hard to test, and they've overlooked it.
And you don't want to mess around with sway bar, though, or, you know, or rack. I've had some bad experiences with that.
Yeah, and if the noise is that harsh and people in the car are saying, what's going on there? I can't believe that a shop can't put their eyes or ears on it. They have to experience it first. You know, maybe you need to go for a ride with the mechanic or the advisor and say, look, I want to just demonstrate to you what's happening here. And maybe that will lead somebody into a new direction.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot. Let's go to Saugerties. Victor's been waiting a very long time. Victor, you're on. Very long. He's asleep. Victor, are you there?
Tired.
Poor Victor. He's been waiting 35 minutes. One more chance there, Victor.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm muted. I had you. Yeah, thank you so much for those introductory remarks about the electric car. I've been a big fan of them, you know, since Toyota first came out with them. I just wanted to make a quick comment about this range anxiety, because I'm very happy with the, I don't want to mention the name, but you're going to guess the type of electric car I've got, because my wife had to go see her father in Michigan, and it was a long trip. But when you look at the screen, there was never a period in which I was anxious.
Oh, good.
But after the trip, she then said, I'll never do that again. She was so, she didn't want to admit she was anxious, I think, at the time. But this particular brand shows you where, you know, all the Stewarts are, and they have these hidden fast chargers, which hardly give you time to go to the bathroom and have a cup of coffee. And it's charged up already.
Wow, that's tremendous. So, do you have a question?
Yeah. So I've got several questions about. I bought a very old A6 Audi 06.
Okay.
It had 180,000 miles on it. It's got a little bit of an oil leak, but it's not very much. But it leaves a trail of less than an inch and a half spot of oil wherever I go. And so, you know, it's a little embarrassing if you park in somebody's driveway and it's leaving these marks all over the place. I think I could live with it. But here's my question about when I look at the market of buying an oil seal additive to stop the oil leak, there's a big range and a big range in price. So my question is, I know you can't tell me a brand, but I'm assuming you have some recommendations of what type of oil seal. And I bought one that's like a Bars Leaks, and it seems to help, but it's still doing it.
Okay. Go ahead, Gordon.
It's generally oil leaks aren't going to be solved with additives. And I've experimented with stuff over the years. Cooling systems are a different story. They respond quite nicely to certain additives, because if it's a tiny, tiny leak, it's easy to seal up. But the oil additives claim to reinvigorate the seals, make them soft, make them supple, make them seal again, maybe. The brand that you mentioned earlier has been around forever. That's as good a choice as any. If that helps you at all, that's fine. But I wouldn't go trying one after the other, because it's probably a leak that is not going to be helped by these particular additives.
All right.
And it needs to be looked at to see where the leak is coming from. But on some of these engines, they are so complicated, and everything is in hidden. You know, some of these oil leaks, you'll never see where they're coming from until you take 1,000 things apart. You're right. You may want to just live with it if it's that minor.
Okay.
Right. That's what I'm thinking. Because when I took it to the closest thing to a dealer in this area, they said it could be the cover, because there was a little bit of oil at the head of the screw of the cover. But now I did a good cleaning, and that went away. So that's what makes me think it may not be the cover. And I'm not sure if it's leaking from one place, or it was so dirty underneath. I had to take it to numerous, car washes and degreasers to try and clear. This has been there a pretty long time, so the oil had built up so thick at the bottom.
Right.
You needed a paint scraper to get it off.
High mileage oil leaks are very difficult to solve, very time consuming, very expensive, and frustrating to the owner of the car and the owner of the shop, because you could spend $1,500 on something, and then a month later the phone rings and, hey, I got a spot of oil back on the floor. Nobody's happy at that point.
All right, Victor, thanks a lot. We only have a couple of minutes left here. Paul in Wappingers Falls has been waiting for 35 minutes as well. Paul, you'll be the last one here. You got a minute and a half. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I have a 2016 Kia Sorento, and I've been discovering that in the mornings I can't, my car won't turn over. It won't start. I have to try like about 10-15 minutes or so before it actually turn over and starts.
Okay.
Once it starts, I have no problem during the day having it start. I've changed the batteries. I've changed the spark plugs. I've had additives up to the gas line. I don't know what could be causing the problem.
All right.
And it's only happened during the morning time.
All right. Only in the morning. Gordon, you have about 45 seconds to give us an answer here.
So when you say it won't turn over, when you push the button or turn the key, does the starter make the cranking sounds like
but
the engine is not firing, or is it silent?
No. All I get is like an electronic kind of like sound, but no turning over or anything like that.
Okay.
Got it. Okay. Now we know the symptom. You've done a lot of stuff working around it, which is a good thing. Confirm and or replace the battery, and I'm assuming the connections and all that. It is very
just
possible.
Just a battery and a spark plug.
Okay, so it's probably...
Yes.
Go ahead, Gordon.
It is entirely possible that it is the starter. I think Ray was ready to
give
that one out.
I don't want to steal your thunder.
But I hate to just say go change the starter. It's nice for the shop to experience the no start and test it.
Yeah.
But if it only happens once in a while, you may have to leave it at a shop overnight and hope it fails to start for the mechanic that next morning.
All right, Paul.
But my guess is probably a starter.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, Paul. Gordon Fricke, wonderful job. We'll end with a joke from another Gordon who writes in, this guy brought his Volkswagen to a garage and said, I think there's a problem with the Cadillac converter. The mechanic, thinking he meant catalytic converter, asked, what's the problem? I put the thing on, but it's still a Volkswagen. Ba-dum-bump. And that's from Gordon, a different one. Hey, Gordon Fricke. Go ahead,
man. And I was going to say earlier when we were talking about cataracts, I said, by the way, Ray, you have a cataract, don't you? Ha, 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 ha.
All right. Well, on that hilarious note, we'll leave it there. Hey, man, we'll see you
all
next
right.
month.
Support, got it.
Support comes from ArtSpark, Saratoga Springs, New York, digital marketing services dedicated to artists and their art. ArtSpark.com for consultation. Temple Sinai, Saratoga Springs, New York, an open congregation welcoming the Jewish community and visitors for Shabbat and holiday services, cultural services, and more. SaratogaSinai.org for details. At Gloversville Sewing Center, Gloversville, a quilt shop offering a selection of fabrics and accessories, including Bernina and Janome sewing machines, a proud underwriter of WAMC for over 30 years. We're worth the trip. GloversvilleSewingCenter.com. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here. Thank you for calling. Thank you for... There were so many calls we didn't get to. I apologize. You got to call early and hope for the best when Gordon's here. He'll be back next month. Thanks to Zach Malloy and Ed Rosen in Master Control. Tomorrow, it's Travel with Gene Gagnon. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.